Ramadan, Zara.
Happy Ramadan, Taz.
I'm hungry. Is that, I'm not supposed to say that, am I?
Why?
I'm supposed to be like, fasting so easy for me.
Oh yeah, you're supposed to be like, happy Ramadan. I'm so happy. I'm so glowing happy. Inside. Yeah,
but I'm kind of hungry.
I'm filled with prayer and love.
I'm sensing a little bit more sarcasm than what I was putting out there.
I'm filled with Holy Spirit.
The Holy Spirit.
This is a time of forgiveness.
It is a time of forgiveness.
This is a time of cleansing.
It is a time of cleansing.
No, we're not Catholic. We have a different kind of month.
I don't even know what Catholics practice.
I've got Ramadan brain. How about you?
I have Ramadan brain, but that's because I'm not eating.
I have Ramadan brain, but that's because this month is triggering.
What else is going on for you this month?
I have a lot of stuff going on. I should probably get to some of it. I have a fellowship with the Pop Culture Collaborative on Comedy for Change. I am now in collaboration with Golden Thread Theater Productions of San Francisco. And my director, Lisa Marie Rollins, is also directing my new comedy special coming out. It's called On Behalf of All Muslims. I may change the title to On Behalf of All Americans. But this is a conversation for a later date. I'm curious to hear what our fans think of just the title. But anyway, I have to probably get to work on those things.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
I have Ramadan brain, but all I can think about is how we saw Michelle Obama talking to Tracy Ellis Ross at the United States Women's Summit, which was amazing.
I just went into like a full orgasm.
It was so cool. I've never seen Michelle speak before. It was really cool to experience that with you and my sisters and just being in a gigantic room of 6,000 women, but like being in a huge space with so many women. So,
and Tracy Ellis Ross.
I love her.
Also, so many of our incredible friends were there. May Al-Hassan was there. And then Ibtihaj Muhammad. I mean, we're not friends, but it's going to feel like. But it was just like there were so many amazing women.
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk about Ramadan.
Let's talk about Ramadan.
I don't know what to say about Ramadan.
Is that because it's so complex or because of Ramadan brain?
It's because of Ramadan brain. It's day three. We are in day three of Ramadan, which means that my brain is starting to get mushier. Mm. Day one was really hard. Because I had ramen the night before, and I didn't realize how salty the ramen was, so I woke up really dehydrated.
Oh, no.
I woke up dehydrated, and this is like first day of fast, and I was like, oh, my gosh, the rest of the day is going to kill me. I was completely dehydrated all day. And then the next day, I, like, planned better, and I drank a lot of water. But that I did not realize ramen was going to kill me the way it did.
Okay, also, it's because we're old.
We are old.
Because, like, okay, the other day, I binged on popcorn before I went to sleep, and I woke up like a prune.
Oh yeah. Well, I think for me though, I've been doing Whole30 for the whole month before, so I was actually prepping my body. But then I did a 72 hours binge where I just ate donuts and carbs, and all of a sudden it just undid me, like everything I did undone.
This is what I'm saying is like our cells.
Yeah, we're too old.
Something like scientifically happens with your cells. As you age.
Oh my gosh. I was talking to someone yesterday and they were talking about how they would just like Postmates all their meals. I was like, you just wait until you become my age. You're going to have to start cooking. Your metabolism's going to drop. Yeah. Your body can't take it anymore.
It's true. I can't Postmates everything because you can't eat a bunch of preservatives anymore. Yeah.
You know what happened? This is kind of like a little TMI. So halim is amazing. Halim is this dish that is kind of like a meat stew that people serve at iftar.
Yes.
It's so delicious. So to break my fast on that first day, I went to the local market in Little Bangladesh and I got a little tub of halim. Mm-hmm. And then I took a bite of it after when I was breaking my fast. It was really spicy. And then I was like, man, I can't eat this because I'm old now. And if I eat this, that means the whole next day I'm going to be on the toilet the whole day. And I was like, I don't want to do that.
This is so real. I'm so here for this conversation.
You know, because I think that like when you're younger, you're just like, yeah, I can do spicy. You know how like white people always challenge you on their spicy level? They're like, I can do spicy. Can you do spicy? I was like,
no,
yes.
Because I'm Persian.
I can do spicy, but I can't do spicy if I want to like have a real life the next day and not be on the toilet all day. I'm smarter than that. I know my body. That being said, I ate half of it because it was really delicious. I was hungry. And this is my cycle, my Ramadan cycle.
The dehydration cycle.
Dehydration and then eating bad food and then like not eating all day. I promised myself I was going to be better. The other thing I promised myself that's been really hard to do was I was going to take Facebook and Twitter off of my phone.
Ha.
And it's day three and I still don't have the courage to do it.
Ha, 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 ha. Wait, okay. So what's the courage about? Tell me.
I think I'm too addicted to having Twitter and Facebook on my phone constantly.
Okay. I have something to share about this.
Yeah.
Maybe from that book, The Power of Habit, that I can't stop quoting.
Yeah.
But it's from The Power of Habit.
Okay, what's it saying?
Okay, so this has become extra relevant to me because I am dog training right now. And you have to use a clicker to dog train. And what you do is, as soon as they do the thing that it is that you want, you click and you give a treat.
But I can't get treats because I'm fasting for a moment.
But this is why Twitter is the treat.
Oh, I
you
see.
You click, dopamine hit. Click, dopamine hit. You did something. It went somewhere.
And then you go to Twitter. No, I kind of just want to keep it on my computer and just like, actually, the whole reason is because we're doing Poetry Day for Ramadan. Mm. Zara's in this group.
I'm in it.
And we have a big group of like 71 people. It's honestly the one place where I find wholesomeness and grace in this month. Mm-hmm. Like, I think I get so lost in everything, but just reading everyone's words is so powerful and meaningful. And I realize that I'm wasting so much of my time on Facebook and Twitter. And I just want to write. I just want to write and contribute to this group and, like, be a part of this. So that's why I wanted to take it off. So you're saying that I should write and then use Twitter as a reward for writing is what you're saying.
I don't think that's what I said. I don't think that's what I said.
I think after the re-record, I'm just going to need your support to delete these apps off of my phone.
I can do that for you.
We are going to break this habit.
Also because I have deleted those apps from my phone so many times.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, I get horrible FOMO.
Yeah. Yeah.
It hurts. And in Persian, there's a saying, Jat Khali. And it means, oh, your place was empty. And there are all these ways that, like, at some point I want to write about this. And I was on Twitter going back and forth with Porchi Sehokpour, who's an amazing Iranian writer that you guys should all know, who has a book coming out that was in a top 10 list of best books of the year coming out, along with Rhonda Gerard. Okay, Persians, we gush. Everything is like a gush and everything is like, I would die for you. And you always just wait for the reciprocation of like, so then when you go out somewhere, like you say, Jat Khali, and it just means like, oh, your place was empty. We were thinking about you. And in American culture, there isn't a language for that. There's just FOMO, which is so
it's
shitty.
Kind of like the opposite of that.
Exactly. And like, there's no way for me to express, oh, what a gorgeous event. How wonderful. I would die for you. I would bury myself in a tomb for you and your family.
No.
You are my liver.
It's dark.
But it's not in Persia. It's so lovely. And then, like, with all the shit that's going down with Iran and how scary it is, like, it just all hurts. So all of that is a really roundabout way of saying it's very easy for me to delete those apps from
Good.
My phone.
I need your lessons. I also think that, you know, every Ramadan, there's always really terrible things that happen in the news. Like, there's always terrorist attacks. And I think just to kind of, like, prep for that, I just don't want those on my phone. Like, I don't want to look at it first thing in the morning.
Do you get news notifications?
I don't. But I follow a lot of news on my Twitter. So then I always go to Twitter first. So then I always see the news.
I have gotten to the space now where the way that I cope now in this phase of dealing with the assault that is called news these days, I just am like, hey, we're all going to die sometime.
Yeah. I mean, that's one way to look at it.
Well, I guess the piece that I missed in that little lily pad jump is that I have news notifications on for that moment where they say, like, we're going to war with Iran.
Oh, right. So that's why you're following the news.
But my heart can't take it. I can't.
I mean, like, it's also, I work for 18 Million Rising, which is a digital media organization. So I can't actually, like, remove myself from the news. Like, I have to be on Facebook and Twitter all the time because it's a part of my job.
You know what we need to do? We need to get you a work phone.
A work phone, yeah.
You need a separate work phone.
Well, that's what I was thinking. I was like, if I can just follow my computer's not always on at my place. Mm. Then I'll just be separate. I just need a month. I need a break. I've also been, like, getting into a lot of fights with people on Twitter and Facebook. Like, every week it's, like, some new fight. And I'm just like, no, I just need a break from fighting with people. And I'm fighting with people because I realize I will defend women. I will defend strong women. And then for some reason, people don't like that. And that's the reason for about 75% of the fights.
Fuck that shit. And yes.
Yes. High five.
All right. Let's talk about dislikable women.
Yes. Okay. So Zara and I went to the LA Asian Pacific Film Festival here in LA.
Shout out to Visual Communication.
And on the closing night, we watched Matangi Maya MIA, which is a documentary about her life. And I was so blown away. Loved it. It was so good.
It was so powerful. It was wholly unexpected for me.
Totally.
Which I'm surprised to hear you say also because you really followed her career very closely. And it was still unexpected for you.
Yeah, I think it was unexpected probably in different ways for me than for you. But it was definitely unexpected.
Why don't you give our listeners like a quick little summation of what aspect of her career you had been following on CPM Mutiny?
Yeah. So, I mean, I've been writing about MIA since her first album came out. I think this was even before I was writing for CP Mutiny. I remember going to Jimmy Kimmel's show and she was the guest and they didn't give her the big stage. They gave her a small stage and it was like maybe there was like 100 people in the room, maybe 200. And then I went with my sister and I was like, oh, my gosh, she's amazing. And no one knew who she was back then. And Diplo was there. And that wasn't in the documentary. I've been following her for so long. I remember writing an article for Wiretap magazine talking about like Desi Pride and what it means to support other brown people. And I was trying to look for that article after watching this documentary and I couldn't find it because the internet always forgets things that you write. It's always gone. It does.
Huh.
Especially the ones that you want.
Mm.
And so basically the documentary kind of goes through her life from being a kid and
she has all this footage.
She has amazing footage.
Of herself as a kid, of her family.
Because she wanted to be a filmmaker. So because she wanted to be a filmmaker, she wanted to do documentaries. She always was capturing footage.
And she kept all these tapes.
Which I find so remarkable that she was able to do this documentary in this kind of a way. And she didn't do it. She had a lifelong friend of hers was the producer of the film. It was just fantastic. I have been following her career long enough to know that in modern, contemporary pop culture, she is known as problematic. She gets shit talked about a lot. And I think in some ways, she's removed herself from the spotlight because of that in some ways.
It also became clear to me from the documentary that I don't know that I walked away seeing that she removed herself from the spotlight. What I saw was that the media machine relegated her to this marginalized I don't know what the word is, but basically like the label of terrorist.
Yeah.
They played around with the label of terrorist in relationship to her. And then at the same time called her silly, which is interesting to me.
Yeah.
Right. To be like accused of terrorism and also relegated to silly.
Totally. Yeah.
Like, huh. Huh.
But as women, that happens.
Interesting.
Interesting.
Interesting binary of designations.
And I think for me, what was really remarkable in watching this was just how much of my life was tied up in MIA's life in some ways. I don't know if that makes sense. Just like because I was writing about her so consistently, like every moment in what we saw in the film, I was like, oh, yeah, I remember when she did that. I remember when I read that article and I got into that fight with that one person about that incident. And it was very nostalgic for me to watch it. And I loved it. It was so good. I think we forget when someone says something problematic now that we all of a sudden are like, oh, she never meant anything to me back then. But then really, she's on her own journey and she's going through things and media's portraying her in different ways and people learn along the ways and people forget along the ways. And for her career, a lot of how I saw myself as a rebellious brown girl was in how I saw her and how she made her music. And then, like, my love for spray painting and my love for, like, tigers. And, you know, like, there's so many little things which are just, like, I just see in my life that is influenced by her art.
It's just so gorgeous to hear you talk about it. Also, I really want an interview with you and her. Like, that conversation.
I also want an interview with me and her.
Like, I just want a recorded conversation between Taz and MIA. That's all. That needs to happen.
I tried. I tried for many years. It was very difficult.
Watching it for me, I was just blown away by how blown away I was. There was so much I didn't know. And, you know, when it comes to music, many are often blown away with how much I don't know.
Me.
I know, because I didn't really grow up with music.
Yeah.
Also, I grew up as a, like, white suburban kid. So, you know, I, like, was listening to Nirvana because everyone said listen to Nirvana.
Yeah.
And I was listening to Green Day because everyone said listen to Green Day. And when MIA came out, I was like, what is this? And the people who were my community at that time said, oh, you know, she's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And it just was like a laugh. And in the documentary, there's this painful interview between her and Bill Maher that lasts about 10 seconds.
Yeah.
And it does enough damage in that 10 seconds to just, like, my heart. Ugh. Because in the comedy world, she is this archetype of, like, the rap star that babbles and doesn't know what she's talking about and tries to talk about these, like, big topics that she doesn't really know anything about, which is also like a typecast stereotyping of a type of woman.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Right? That, like, the woman who tries to talk about big things but doesn't actually know what she's talking about, and it's always like, oh, quiet,
yeah,
sweetie.
There's an SNL character of it.
Yes. So as a comedian, like, I was around that joke all of the time. And so I became familiar with her in that framing before.
Oh, that's fascinating.
I became familiar with her.
Interesting.
And so it hurt a little extra because we did that sketch also last episode.
Yeah.
And then I felt myself tapping into that, you know, as part of the joke. And I'm sorry, MIA.
Oh, interesting. I mean, I felt like I felt our skit was an homage. Homage?
Homage.
Homage. Fuck, no, I'm going to say it right. You keep correcting me in this podcast.
I hate that, but I hate that. Anyway.
Homage.
Who cares? English is a dumb language. Anyway.
I thought it was clever and I thought it was, like, awesome because I love MIA. And so that's kind of how I saw it.
Yes.
I also love Frizz. But I do get what you're saying about how we take complicated women and try to diminish them and diminish their light. And I think the other thing that I was thinking about was I'm in a lot of spaces right now and I'm working on a project with 18MR where we're trying to take Asian American artists and musicians and visual artists and influencer types and trying to give them the political education so that they can make politically educated art because I think there's a gap there. And I think that's one of the things that I was thinking about, how MIA keeps getting trashed about she doesn't know enough. She keeps talking about how her dad's a terrorist, but her dad doesn't like her. You know, she keeps getting put into this box. And I think that when people are artists, they don't have access to the kind of political education that I did going to, you know, getting a master in public policy or PhD people do. And I think we have to be a little bit forgiving of that and give them the access to knowledge. And I think there's, like, a scene in the documentary near the end where she's at a event and she's, like, talking to some donor type people.
Yes.
And she's like, oh, I've never been to anything like this before. And I think, why not? Like, she should have been invited to these spaces as an artist who's Sri Lankan talking about whatever the issues are that she was talking about at that event. And I think there's this gap that we have such high expectations of artists and musicians without them having the access to the knowledge that we want them to have.
Girl, I'm sitting across from you. Yes. I mean, that's how I came into activism, was like, I don't feel like I belong here, but I don't feel like I belong anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I'm trying to be a comedian, you know, like, and the whole reason why I got into comedy was because I feel like people take things too seriously as it is.
Yeah.
You know, and so I want to talk about jokes. And then here I am talking about politics. And, like, we're constantly, like you said, like, we're constantly saddled with these responsibilities as people of color. And as women, we're constantly denied expertise.
And we're denied the journey of learning.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
You know, like, because it takes a while to learn.
Is this your Ramadan brain? Because it's like...
This is my Ramadan brain.
This is, like, did the kids say on fleek?
No, I've just been thinking
a lot. You're on fleek. Your Ramadan brain is on fleek. Does that
even
make sense?
A lot about MIA since we watched the documentary, just because, I don't know, it was so good. And I've been getting into a lot of fights about it, too. Fights. Fights is what helps me. Online fights.
Now I'm even more curious about your Twitter addiction.
I know. It used to stop. Okay, before we close out Hot Topics, we have to talk about it, even though I don't really want to talk about it. Because it's so depressing. But Gaza, holy shit.
This is the one thing that I am, like, really happy to talk about because, oh my God, it has been impossible to talk about Palestinians without people jumping all over you
yep.
and throwing you into conversations about anti-Semitism mm-hmm. when really you want to talk about genocide.
Yeah. Yeah. Zara, you have a clip that you wanted to share.
Yes. A friend of the podcast, Samira Azam, shared this clip from CBS News with Noura Erekat that she shared via the Facebook page Jewish Voice for Peace. She's in an interview that is like the be-all, end-all of interviews interrogating anyone talking about freedom for Palestinians.
It has been made very clear that this is a gathering of Palestinian civil society who have organized themselves without any direction from Hamas, and in fact, in contravention to them. Hamas is not just Israel's nightmare. Palestinians don't want them either, but that is actually a scarecrow in this situation. When we continuously look at Hamas as the source of the issues, what we're doing is we are dehumanizing Palestinians who have been protesting for 70 years. Hamas wasn't created until 1987. Why were Palestinians protesting before then? Palestinians are being removed in Jerusalem, in Sheikh Jarrah, in Hizmet, within Israel, in Umm al-Hiran. There is no Hamas there. This is a scarecrow, and we should engage in more responsible discussion mm-hmm. about why Palestinians are protesting, how their human rights are being violated, and how Israel needs to be held to account.
So obviously this goes back as...
And what's interesting to me is how much is about what we can and can't talk about when it comes to conversations around supremacy at all? Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because like there was all this time where we couldn't talk about whiteness.
Yeah.
Don't make it about race. Don't make it about race. Don't make it about race. And then now we can have those conversations because white supremacy is in the seat of power.
Yes.
And similarly, there's this way that you couldn't talk about Palestinians protesting and defending the life of Palestinians until now when it's, the situation is even more horrific. So that's interesting to me. That's interesting to me that that's a popular challenge to talk about is the inability to talk about things.
Yeah, I think one of the ways that we've been seeing it reflected is in the New York Times. The New York Times has been doing a shitty job this week for the past 2 weeks. I think one of them was talking about how people in Gaza died, and they just kind of like ended there. And everyone's like, well, they died because they were shot at by Israelis. And then they had another one that was really problematic. And just this is very passive because everyone's like too scared to have active voice when it comes to these covers. And we have to spell it out because it is a genocide that's happening there. It also just like happened the day before Ramadan started. Like really, they had to change the capital to Jerusalem the day before Ramadan started. That's as planned as it usually is for everything that comes out of, Israel when it comes to Gaza.
Hassan Minhaj on Twitter and on his Instagram posted these great two photos that showed two very different experiences. And one of them was Ivanka Trump smiling, pointing to her father's plaque on the embassy, which, to give you an idea of how fucking weird, for lack of any other phrase,
yeah.
All of this is that John Hagee, one of America's most prominent end times preachers, who once said that Hitler was sent by God to drive the Jews to their ancestral homeland, gave the closing benediction.
Oof.
What the fuck is going on?
What is happening? This is what happens when white supremacists unite and also just what?
What the fuck is going on?
Yeah, I don't know what the fuck is going on. We've just been falling apart as a world society.
I have nothing to add to that.
I have nothing to add. I just hope that this is not a sign of what's to come for the month of Ramadan, but I am 110% confident that this is just kind of like a prequel to what we are going to see be terrible things that happen for the month of Ramadan, because that's what happens every year.
Yeah. I'm trying to find a different note to end on before we go to our sponsor.
Well, I mean, our hopeful note could be that we are going to pray and be blessed and hold light for these people in Gaza and also for people everywhere. We need to have hope in this desperate, terrible time.
That's a gorgeous note to end on.
We'll be right back. Zara, can you tell the audience what is on my dress?
Wait, are those succulents?
They're cactuses.
Oh, baby.
Can you tell the audience where my hands are?
Are they in the pockets of your dress?
Yes, they're in the pockets of my succulent dress. This is everything I've ever wanted in my life. A cactus dress with pockets.
All right, look what I brought.
What is that?
This is my Golden Gate Bridge bookend that I got on Mod Clock.
What? They have other things too?
Yes, because I was a little intimidated at first to buy clothes. Now that I know that they have a stylist, I'm so excited.
But this is a pretty good bookend.
Yeah, this is gorgeous. I mean, I've been missing San Francisco. I moved to LA.
It's shaped like a bridge.
Yes, it's shaped like the Golden Gate Suspension Bridge, and so I got it.
Ready to make waves this season? Head right on over to Mod Cloth. Hit the beach in aquatic prints, rainbow brights, and sun swimwear. Pair your fave statement pieces with everyday denim or a polished skirt. It's totally wearable, but totally you.
Mod Cloth signature label is designed by women for women. These exclusive looks come in a full-size range, which is especially appreciated by someone like me who is not standard sizing.
Got a question about fit, like Zara does? Their team at Mod Stylist can hook you up with complimentary sizing and styling help.
P.S. It's officially wedding season. Find everything you need in the Mod Cloth Bridal Boutique. Whether you're a bride, a bridesmaid, or the very best dressed guest, you can get even free sizing and styling help from their team of Mod Stylists, which is what I go there for.
I've been having a lot of fun on the Mod Cloth website. I've been spending almost every night looking at it, trying to figure out what to buy. And I have some suggestions for Mod Cloth. I think they need some tiger prints, some tight, like tiger faces, because I'm all about the tiger faces. Maybe some like spray painty kind of prints, maybe like in hot pink, because I'm influenced by MIA right now. And, you know, for the Muslims out there, how about a moon and star print so that we can have a whole Muslim print line? And then we can call it the Good Muslim, Bad Muslim line of designs at Mod Cloth.
Yes to all of this.
Yes.
And as Taz's manager, I will take 15%. My co-host is a genius. Okay, my next shopping adventure with Mod. I'm going to try to buy a sundress. I'm going to do it.
Yes.
With the help of their stylists and their online support. I need this. And there's 15% off.
Yeah, to get 15% off your purchase of $100 or more, go to modcloth.com and enter the code GOOD at checkout. Hurry, this offer expires August 4th, 2018.
Which technically gives you 3 months.
Yeah.
But if you're listening to this podcast later, way later, August 4th, 2018, you have until then to score that discount.
Once again, to get 15% off your purchase of $100 or more, go to modcloth.com and enter the code GOOD at checkout. And we're back to Creeping Sharia.
Creeping Sharia.
Have I got a Creeping Sharia for you? It's summertime. Summertime for me.
Yeah.
Was like all about getting all the kids on the cul-de-sac together.
Okay.
To like put on plays, play pretend, and pretend we're pirates.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
And we would make our own treasure maps.
Of course.
Which are Muslim.
What do you mean they're Muslim?
Okay. So you know the act of creating and designing a map on paper.
Yeah.
Muslims invented this.
How is that possible? I feel like I invented that when I was 4. Because I was like, I'm going to bury this in my backyard and then I'm going to draw a map of a tree and lines to it.
Yeah, Taz, that's what it says on Wikipedia. It says treasure maps invented by Taz Ahmed at 4.
At 4.
Yeah, and she's a Muslim.
Yeah.
And Zara mentioned it on the podcast.
What did you learn?
So, okay, during this like medieval era, these are the loose facts I'm going to give everybody. Okay. Once upon a time in a medieval era.
Yes.
There was a land where Muslims were thriving and not in a medieval mind frame.
Okay.
And science was thriving.
Muslims invented science. Yeah.
The scientific method, yeah. Optics, color theory is Muslims.
Yeah. Algebra.
Algebra, algorithms.
All of it.
All of it. Also, Muslims were traveling a shitload.
Oh, yeah. That's true.
And because Muslims were efficient, yeah. Are efficient. Are we still efficient?
Yeah, yeah.
As an entire people?
Totally.
We were keeping, like, maps so that we wouldn't get lost.
But why is no one else creating maps?
Because this is the start of everything, man. No one else was doing the scientific method. No one else was being like, hey, let's not divide with Roman numerals. No one else was doing that. It was a time where Muslims were like, let's do some shit that no one else is doing. Like what? Like a freaking treasure map.
Interesting. I mean, like, if I was creating treasure maps when I was 4 years old, these other medieval people must have been really dumb.
You know what's amazing about calling out culture? Is that there is a group that's going to email us. It's going to be like medieval people.
We're not dumb.
And we're going to check you on this.
They're not dummies. Can I tell you my creeping Sharia?
Please.
So I was a little obsessed with the Met Gala outfits. And the theme this year was something about like Catholicism reimagined, which I was wondering if Catholics thought that was problematic. Because if it was like Muslim reimagined on the red carpet at the Met Gala, I'd be like, that's really fucked up. Anyways, so people were walking and there were lots of hijabs. There's all these hijabs on the red carpet.
I saw that.
And I was sharing them. Priyanka Chopra had a gorgeous golden hijab, which I thought was very appropriate for Eid. Kate Bosworth had this like cream dupatta hijab, which I thought I had seen at a Desi wedding at some point. Nicki Minaj had this like gothic bejeweled black hijab thing going on.
It's gorgeous.
And, you know, like there was even a niqab hijab from Cara Delevingne, who was wearing this like weird thing on her face. And I was like, that could be a niqab. And so like I went on, I was being tongue in cheek about this on social media. And there was definitely a lot of people that were like, that's not a hijab. That's a Catholic mantle or that's a XYZ. And I was like, excuse me, your Islamophobia is showing? Because actually, none of these women are wearing hijab. I was making a joke about how they're allowed to cover their head for fashion, but how real Muslim women aren't allowed to cover our head when we walk down the street. And that's kind of what I was trying to shine a light on.
Nice. Yes.
Everyone was like, that's not a hijab. I was like, if a hijab just means like your head is covered, then technically it is a hijab.
Hijab just means, yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Well, it's just so difficult to like define anything Islamic for anybody because the word hijab gets misused.
Totally.
So it's like, which definition do you want me to give you? The one that gets misused left and right, or the other one that gets misused left and right, or what it really means, or what people dispute what it really means?
Yeah. Yeah. And if you just take it at its core, which just means your head is covered, then, yeah, all these women are having their head covered. Also, this was a costume festival. So, like, everyone was in the wrong because no one is actually performing Catholic ceremonies and prayers at the Met Gala. Because it's costume. It's costume, everyone. It's not real.
But all clothing is a performance, Taz.
The plus side I was thinking about was, like, how cool would it be if all these, like, fashionable hijabs, you know, these are probably very expensive attire that Priyanka Chopra has on her head. What if, like, the fashionable Muslim mipsters could wear these at Eid prayer? You know, like, it's so hard for, like, Muslim women that cover in hijab to have access to this kind of gorgeousness because they're very expensive and they're made for the red carpet. But, like, what if Eid was just, like, golden, whatever it's the custom-made, expensive hijabs?
What would yours be made out of?
Mine would be the one that Janelle Monáe wore, which is this, like, silver thing. And then she had, like, a sun hat on top of it, which I thought was very practical because it's, like, your head is covered in hijab. But you can also go out in the sun and, like, be shaded from getting sunburnt. And you can also show off your cleavage in it. You know, like, it's everything all at once.
That's one of the things I like about the Magdalene. When you wear it, you can also show off your cleavage.
You can show off your cleavage, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would wear a hijab that was made out of American flags.
No.
Yeah. I would wear it so that I could show everybody that I can be American, I can be Muslim, and I can love all of it.
Were you behind my sister's getting me that poster at the U.S. Women's Forum?
They got it for you?
They got it for me.
I told them not to.
They totally got it for me. I was just like, but Zara was behind that.
I told them. No, I said that it's not going to go well. I know the joke that you're trying to make, like, after I mentioned it. Like, at first they were doing it sincerely. And then I was like, no, listen, it's really complicated. And then they were like, oh, so then it'll be funny. And I was like, no, listen, it won't be funny.
I came to my dad's house and it was, like, on my bed. I was like, why is this here? I was like, did Zara have something to do with this? She was hanging out with him that day. And I didn't say anything to them. I shoved it in the back of my closet.
I'm dead. Oh, my God. I'm dead. Oh, that makes me so happy. All right. It's fatwa time. On the red carpet for the MIA documentary, we asked a bunch of folks for their fatwas, which was really fun.
That was so much fun. I'm so glad we did that. I feel like we need to do more red carpet events.
We definitely need to do more red carpet events.
We're so good at it.
We were like super fly. And also, none of these interviews are by Muslims.
Yeah.
So it was a lot of fun to explain to them what a fatwa is.
Yeah. Take a listen. We are on the red carpet at the Los Angeles Asian Pacific Film Festival. We're excited. We're going to be interviewing people on the red carpet. So we're going to go talk to some people.
My name is Tim Chopra. I'm a director, and I couldn't be more proud to be on this amazing fucking podcast. But I'm putting a fatwa on Mercury retrograde. It's so messed up right now. What's happening with Mercury? It's just turning my equilibrium upside down, and my dynamics are all going inside out. This footage shouldn't even be out there in the world, because I don't even know what I'm saying, because retrograde is so crazy. But maybe this fatwa I'm putting on it right now will end where I'm at.
Down with Mercury retrograde. Yeah.
So your name's, how you're affiliated?
Elaine Delalis.
Michael Nielot.
And we're This Filipino American Life. It's a podcast that explores the nuanced experiences of Filipinos in the United States.
We're so excited to have you on our podcast.
Yay!
Oh my God, it's like a crossover episode.
Promotion.
So what would your fatwa be?
There is a phobia where you don't like things with like circles.
Yes, I know about this.
So like anything with like lotuses or that kind of like warts, I can't handle it. I actually freak out and start to like scratch everywhere.
Is this why you haven't been to spin class?
No.
Because it's circles?
No, because it's not like 100 circles all in like a very tiny space. But yeah, that's the thing that I can't handle. And I would put a fatwa on like lotuses or anything like that.
I support that. I have a couple of friends who share this phobia.
It's gross.
For this reason, I don't have any of those prints in my house.
Oh, yeah.
Do you have anything to add to this? What are you going to fatwa?
I would say people who don't see each other as neighbors, because I actually work on the issue of homelessness, and it really bothers me that a lot of the conversations about people who are the most in need are seen as othered in a way that doesn't humanize them. I'm only saying that because there's a lot of things happening right now in my mind about homelessness. But yeah, it always bothers me when people don't see each other as people.
Okay, we're here with Ada from Saturday School Podcast.
I'm Ada Singh. I'm also a big fan of the Good Muslim, Bad Muslim podcast. And I'm part of the Potluck Podcast Collective.
Ada and I are writing a movie together.
Yes. I'm trying to help Taz's dream of her Muslim Christmas romantic comedy come true. Okay, this is kind of silly, but it's Muslim-ish.
Yeah.
I realized there's a lot of Shah Rukh Khan movies on Netflix, and today I was watching Om Shanti Om, which is my favorite, and I wish they had like a feature where you could skip straight to the songs like they usually have on the DVDs. So Netflix, if you're going to have Bollywood movies, you should have a feature where people can skip straight to the song, because that's part of the Indian film watching experience.
I don't think we can watch Bollywood films together, because I always skip the songs and go right to the storyline. It sounds like you and I would just not really mesh well watching Bollywood.
But these are films I've like seen already, so I just want to go to the songs.
I'm talking to D-Lo. And I want to know, do you want to issue a fatwa?
I declare a fatwa against people not stopping to just share moments with one another.
Thank you for sharing this moment with me.
Thank you to everyone at the MIA documentary and the LA Asian Pacific Film Closing Night Party for talking to us on the red carpet. If you have a fatwa that you want to declare, tweet us at #GoodMuslimBadMuslim, and we might mention it on our next show.
All right. Awkward Ask a Muslim time. What you got for me, Taz?
You know, the awkward Ask a Muslim is Ramadan related. I was not sure what day it started. And then I got on Twitter and there was all this like, no, it's scientific. There's calculations. It starts today. And then there was like, no, we need to go by the mosque in Saudi Arabia. And they're starting it tomorrow. And then someone else was like, no, you have to go to the tallest mountaintop on the western region of the continental United States and look up at the sky, at the horizon. And it was just so funny. It was a little like ridiculous because this happens every year. But I also think there's something kind of beautiful about this fight that happens every year of like, when does Ramadan start? No one actually asked me this, but I got like heavily into all of the fights on Twitter about it. There is like a website called moonsighting.com, which kind of like documents where around the world. It's kind of like, you know, that map of Santa Claus going around the world. It's kind of like that map, but it's like of where the moon sightings are. And then it was like the first moon sighting happened in Fullerton with four guys. Like it's very dramatic.
I just love that you brought it back around to Christmas.
Of course, because everything is Christmas related. And I learned that the calculations said that the new moon was on the horizon for Los Angeles for 26 minutes on the first day of Ramadan. So the calculations have been there, but you know, I think there's something also kind of like beautiful that I know there's a mosque in San Jose where they go to the mountaintops and they get their telescopes and they're like looking for it. And I think like there's
well,
like.
And they're in different Sunni Shia calculations. Yeah. And
there's all these like different things. And I think it's just kind of funny and kind of endearing. I don't know. I love it. I love the drama around it. I don't know why.
I do also love that. I do. I mean, all okay. Ramadan is my awkward ask.
Yeah.
It just is. Like but I struggled with anorexia in college.
Yeah.
I can't even say the word anorexia because to me, to say that I was anorexic feels like an achievement.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't say that. It doesn't feel true because I feel like I could have done even better.
Oof.
And so Ramadan, a time where you fast, is tough.
Yeah.
It's tough. And I know a lot of young women when I was in college who felt like this was the one month where they could feel connected to God because for once they could out-Muslim everyone.
Oh, yeah.
Because of their ability to fast.
To fast, yeah.
And it makes me so emotional talking about it. It's just so hard. And also because I know it's really important. I'm like here with coffee, right? Not supporting my Muslim sister. But at the same time, one of the things that sent me into anorexia was that journey, constantly eating my friends' food because they would push their food on my plate. They would push their emotions on my plate. They would push their life on my plate. And I would just eat it, eat it, eat it, eat it, eat it. And it's how I took care of everybody. And so then this time of month when it comes to take care of all Muslims everywhere, take care of your Muslim brothers and sisters, take care of, you know, I already feel wholly erased all of the time by the standard practice.
Mm-hmm.
And so to hear everybody talk about, like, Ramadan is a pillar of Islam, going to Hajj is a pillar of Islam, like, well, guess what? Saudi Arabia might demolish my country.
Yeah.
You know, there are people in Iran who are boycotting Hajj. When it comes to calling these things, like, pillars and saying that they're standards of Muslimness, it's so fucking complicated.
Yeah.
And I want Ramadan to be a celebration of complication.
Yes.
And so later when we get to our Good Muslim Awards, which we're about to in a minute, I have something to share that just like fills me with so much love, with Ramadan love. But before that, I want to hear your Good Muslim Award.
My Good Muslim Award is going to fellow Muslim Shahid Bathar, who is running for Congress. He's running against Nancy Pelosi and a bunch of other people. California has a top two primary, which is coming up in June. And it's pretty gutsy that he's doing this race.
I mean,
Nancy's kind of a person that's been in Congress for a very long time. Shahid comes from the grassroots civil rights movement. He's also a musician. He like makes electronic music. So he's kind of like one of those like activist artists that I've always seen and looked up to in the work that I've been doing. And just when he announced that he was running, I was just like, oh my gosh, are you like serious? And then how he's been able to use his election to push a lot of the issues that are usually on the margins, he's been able to force people to talk about them. Some of them being his deep passion for privacy and freedom of expression in the face of mass surveillance. That's a big part of how he's been practicing his activism, as well as human rights for how people are being tortured and military detention and drone strikes. So he, in the activist world, he's been well known for those things. And I think these are things that Nancy Pelosi needs to be pushed on. Mm-hmm. And by having this as a campaign topic and having this in his platform, it's forcing the Democratic Party to realize that our issues of people that are on the margins are really important. So giving a shout out to Shahid, Good Muslim Award. Good luck in the primary elections. Looking forward to seeing how it pans out. The people that are going to be able to vote for him are going to be in the San Francisco area of California. But it's going to be big. If we can get Nancy Pelosi out, that's going to be huge.
Hey, Nancy Pelosi, give him a chance. I mean, wasn't she one of the people who was saying about Trump, give him a chance?
Yeah.
I feel like if you could give Trump a chance, maybe a grassroots activist organizer a chance.
You're asking Nancy Pelosi to step down.
It's good to have that to know on my ballot when I'm voting.
Are you voting? I don't think this is in your district.
Damn it. Those of you in that district, do me justice.
Zara, who's your Good Muslim Award going to?
My Good Muslim Award is going to my dear friend, Hala Iqbal. She wrote this poem about Ramadan that I'd like to share that expresses all my complicated love. Earlier in our awkward Ask Muslim, I was just sharing how sort of having to manage food, even for others, and making Ramadan all about food is not just really triggering for some of us, unpleasant, but also doesn't do Ramadan justice, and I feel this poem really does, so I'm going to share it. Ramadan Kareem to my Muslims, my fasting Muslims, my not fasting Muslims, my want to fast but can't Muslims, my don't want to but have to pretend Muslims, my Muslims fasting alone. My slacker Muslims, my sometimes Muslims, my failed Muslims, my trying so hard and still failing Muslims, my angry Muslims, my sad Muslims, my can't wait for this month to be over Muslims, my can't get out of bed Muslims, my feeling all sorts of feelings about this month Muslims, my fighting to be seen as Muslim Muslims, my not really Muslim but racialized as Muslim Muslims, my can't bring their partners to the mosque Muslims, my love of God and love of love, Muslims. Ramadan Kareem to you, to us, my loves. May the month be kind. May our Ummah be kind. May we be kind to each other and ourselves and bask in the kindness our Creator has promised us. Ameen.
Ameen. That's a good note to end our Ramadan episode of Good Muslim, Bad Muslim on. Ramadan Kareem, Eid Mubarak, all the mushy-gushiness that you just mentioned in that lovely poem.
Again, that poem is by Hala Iqbal.
What you got going on for this month?
I am working on my comedy fellowship, which I need to talk to 18MR about, actually. I need to talk to you guys about that. And my comedy special, tell me what you guys think of the title, On Behalf of All Muslims.
Or On Behalf of All Americans.
What do we do? What do we do? And also, I need help with a new website because some jerko bought my domain.
What? How does that happen?
It expires in an email account that you don't check anymore. And you miss it. And you miss the next one that's a warning. And then some group that's online that this is how they make their money is by just buying up domains as soon as they go up, buys it and charges you $400 to get it back, which you're not going to pay. That's a story about how that happens. So I'm going to get my domain back or get a new website. And I have shows coming up this August at Brava Theater. Details to come, but save August.
Awesome.
Like
save
August. The whole month. The whole month.
I have nothing going on. I've been intentionally turning down things. So I'll be in Los Angeles fasting. Ashley. If you are in LA, we are hosting an iftar with Vigilant Love. So please come to the Bridging Communities Iftar on the 24th. There's actually a ton of iftars going on in LA. So if you are in LA, go check them out. And if you're in any city, I'm sure there's like public iftars for you to go out to and support local community organizations. This is a big way that people fundraise for their work. So go support your local Muslim-ish org this Ramadan. I think that's it for me. I don't think I have anything else going on. I have Ramadan brain.
I have Ramadan brain too.
I don't remember. I'm just going to be fasting. I'm going to be fasting and writing.
I'm going to be loving myself.
Good. And you're in writing.
And writing.
Bye. Padafis.
Padafis.
Thanks for listening to the Good Muslim, Bad Muslim podcast hosted by Taz Ahmed and Zara Nurbash. You can follow Taz on Twitter at TazzyStar, that's TAZZYSTAR, and Zara at Zara Comedy, that's ZAHRA Comedy. The show is produced and edited by Quincy Sarasmith, and you can find us on the web at GoodMuslimBadMuslim.com. To follow the conversation, please use the hashtag GoodMuslimBadMuslim. Good Muslim, Bad Muslim is a proud member of Potluck, a collective that features stories and voices from the Asian American community.
Homage? Who cares? English is a dumb language.